If you closed your eyes and tried to picture and list everything you own, could you do it? Are there items in your closets, your kitchen cabinets, the basement or garage that you never use but just can't seem to part with? Whether you feel like you're drowning in a sea of debt or possessions, or if you've started the process of simplifying your life in what you would never have dreamed was possible a few years ago, I think you'll enjoy our visit today with Tammy Strobel. She's the author of You Can Buy Happiness and It's Cheap, How One Woman Radically Simplified Her Life and How You Can Too. And she's developed a wonderful program called A Simple Year, 12 Months of Guided Simplicity. Tammy joins us today from her tiny house. Tammy, thanks so much for coming back to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, it just seemed like as we end one year and start another, it was a good time to check back in with you. You know, downsizing has a bad connotation given what's happened to many workers in the economy, but one of your personal inspirations, Dee Williams, prefers the term smart sizing. And what does that mean to you?
Well, gosh, it means a lot of things, but essentially, for me, it's all about focusing on what matters, and that's a lot of things like work I love and my relationships, the people in my life that I want to spend time with. It's less about the stuff.
And, you know, you live in a tiny house, which for some people might mean 1,000 square feet, but for you, it means 128 square feet.
Yeah, we do live in a very tiny house, and I always caveat, you know, that you don't have to downsize dramatically like we have, my husband and I, but our little house looks like a little tiny cabin, and it's on wheels, and it meets our needs right now in our life, and it's been really fun, a fun adventure to live in this space.
I have to say, after the last time that I was fortunate to talk with you on the air, I was watching Extreme Homes, and all of a sudden, there you were with your tiny house. And it was such fun to actually see you talking about it and giving a tour through this 128 square foot house. And so it's you and your husband, and at least the last time we talked, you had a cat or two also.
Yeah, so my husband and I live in this space, and then we have our two cats, Christy and Elena, and they're not very rowdy. They sleep most of the time, but yeah, they're cute.
But so this wasn't something that one day, you know, you woke up living in a large apartment or house and thought, you know what, I think we only need a tenth of this space. Let's just do it. I mean, this was really a process. What was the motivation for you to really try to streamline your possessions and kind of what hold they had on you?
Yeah, this was definitely a process. It's taken us, you know, years to kind of get to this point in our life where we're in a super small space and have less stuff and kind of, you know, focusing on the things that matter. But there were a couple things that prompted our big life change. One was stress. I was commuting a lot of hours in the car, sitting all day at work. I had a ton of debt, which contributed to the stress and just financial difficulties in general. And Logan and I really just wanted to focus on the things that we loved to do. And downsizing or smart sizing, really, it kind of helped us along the way and kind of get a little bit clearer about our intentions and our goals.
And I think it's interesting because you share that, you know, it's not necessarily something that any of us want to admit, but we do care about what other people think about us. And, you know, there was that thought of what are people going to think, you know, if they think this is all we have or all we can afford?
Yeah, you know, I think that's really a natural thing. I mean, as humans, we want to be liked and loved by our family and friends and neighbors. So, of course, we're going to care what other people think of us, you know, but at the same time, I think it's important to make choices that work for your own life circumstance, you know. And like I was saying, the tiny house works for Logan and I, but, you know, if you've got a family with four kids, your living situation is probably going to look a lot differently. And so really just trying to take a step back and ask yourself, what makes me happy? What do I really need to fulfill my long-term and short-term goals?
I think the idea of debt being something that weighs us down and really is some of the most significant clutter in our lives, both mentally and it leads to physical clutter because a lot of that debt is acquiring possessions. And, you know, you talk about how big a difference that made in reducing the amount of debt you had, and not just reducing the amount of stuff, but that weight that it was on you.
Yeah, it really, it's amazing once you are able to let go of that, whether it's stuff or debt, it just feels so freeing, and it gives you a lot more options in your life. And it's kind of, you know, we worked for a lot of years to pay off the student loan debt, and we lived without a car for about 5 years. We actually recently purchased a car, and so that's kind of a weird feeling. But, you know, again, it's kind of going back to being really mindful about what you choose to buy for a certain circumstance in your life.
For you, having a car probably doubles your square footage.
Yeah.
We're talking with Tammy Strobel. She's the author of You Can Buy Happiness and It's Cheap, How One Woman Radically Simplified Her Life and How You Can Too. She blogs at what is quite possibly the best domain name I've heard in a long time, rowdykittens.com. That's rowdykittens.com. And she's joining us today from her tiny house. What questions do you have for Tammy? What would you like to think about simplifying in your life, but you're not quite sure how to go about it? Or do you need some help in how to deal with the emotional aspects of simplifying and downsizing? We'd love to have you join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. Again, 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Well, Tammy, I really think it's no coincidence at all that the average square footage of American homes has gone up tremendously in the past decades, and so has our level of debt.
Yeah, it's a lot. And, you know, I don't think having a big house is necessarily a bad thing if you can afford it. But it's also, if you can't afford it, it can place a tremendous amount of stress on your life. And for Logan and I, when we were living in a really large apartment and had two cars, we were just over max. We weren't living within our means, and that just caused a lot of, you know, marital conflict and stress in general, like I mentioned earlier.
And it's, I think, having all that extra space that we didn't have, or our grandparents and great-great-grandparents didn't have generations ago, we're filling a lot of that space with stuff.
It's true. There's not only are we filling homes with stuff, but there's a whole plethora of storage units in the U.S. that are kind of exploding with stuff as well. And, you know, I think for me personally, particularly in the last couple years, I've learned that, you know, life is always changing, and really the stuff doesn't matter so much. You know, my dad died last year, and, you know, I'll never get him back. And so for me, it's really, really important to always focus on those relationships, because the people in your life matter most, not the stuff. Stuff is replaceable.
And maybe if we get more satisfaction out of those relationships because we're cultivating them, maybe we'll shift more to thinking about the value of experiences and spending time with people or in nature or, you know, traveling if we're able to, than getting the newest and greatest gadget or something to put in our homes.
Yeah, definitely. And when I was researching happiness research for my book, I was really intrigued to learn that the experiences will bring us more happiness than stuff per se. Positive psychologists say that basically experiences will make you happier in the long run, because you can constantly reflect on those memories after you've, you know, gone on a cool trip or had an amazing hike up a mountain. Whereas when you buy more stuff, it's really cool for a few weeks or a month, but then you adapt to those new things, and so they don't have that long-term payoff. So I thought that was kind of intriguing when I was doing that research for my book.
And Mark in Milwaukee is on the line, so let's go there. Hi, Mark.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to heartily concur with your ethos, because my job took a huge downturn, and then we eventually had to give up our house. And when you mentioned the thing about being embarrassed, that was one of my fears, is how people would view me as less of a responsible human being. And my wife and I moved into a space that's even less than a third of the size of our original space. And it's been very rewarding because the simplicity of it keeps her, has gotten us away from worrying about debt. And we can walk to more things. And it's just the simplicity of it that I appreciate.
That's fantastic, Mark.
And I think, you know, that's part of what you try to convey, Tammy, is that, you know, it's instead of feeling a sense of loss or deprivation, you actually feel like you're gaining a whole lot in the experience. And certainly, you know, we're not saying that it's a great thing if you lose your job and your house like Mark did, but Mark certainly found something positive out of that.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sorry to hear about your house and the job, Mark, but I think it's awesome. It seems like he's really looked at the positive of it, you know, and I think that's kind of important to try and focus on the positive. Even when difficult things really happen, there's always that slimmer of hope and like structuring your life in a way where you can focus on the most meaningful things, because difficult things do happen in life. And it's not always easy, but I think relying on our neighbors and friends and family and those relationships can kind of help you through the tough times.
And I'm sure that Mark is feeling that because they have simplified and smart-sized what the space that they have, that it takes less time and attention as well, which leaves more time and attention for the things that really matter.
Mm-hmm. And that's what Logan and I have found in our super tiny space. You know, we're able to devote more time to family. For example, we're next door neighbors with my in-laws, and so we can help them with, you know, projects in their house or yard work. And we live about a mile away from Logan's grandparents who are in their 90s. And so it's great to be able to go up the road and help them, you know, fix their TV or rake leaves or whatever they need. And so that's really, doing those little things is very important to us.
We're coming up on a break for the news from NPR, but one of the things that really struck me was when you said that if you calculate how much you would have to work to buy something, it really puts it in perspective.
Yeah, for sure.
So maybe it's not worth those 3 hours of work to be able to buy something, or those 10 hours. Well, we will talk much more with Tammy Strobel after this look at the news. She lives in a tiny house and blogs at rowdykittens.com, and we'll hear a lot more from her in just a bit. As a society, we're surrounded by opportunities to spend more, acquire more, and take up more space. Having a large home and filling it with possessions is one way that we judge whether we've made it or not, even if it represents a mountain of debt, constant stress, and not as much time for family, friends, nature, or community as we'd like. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for ending 2013 with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tammy Strobel is the author of You Can Buy Happiness and It's Cheap, How One Woman Radically Simplified Her Life and How You Can Too. She's also developed a wonderful program that we'll talk about called A Simple Year, 12 Months of Guided Simplicity. Tammy joins us today from her tiny house in Northern California. She blogs at rowdykittens.com. Tammy, it's always a pleasure to have you join us on the Ideas Network. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, we have some folks on the phone, so let's go right there and talk with Vicki in Viroqua first. Hi, Vicki.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you today?
Doing well.
Good, good. My question is this. I just know that in my own home, the kitchen seems to be the area that we have the hardest time maintaining. And of course, to save money, cooking at home certainly pays, but I just can't imagine like boiling a chicken in such a small area. How do you maintain your kitchen, and do you cook at home a lot?
That's a great question, Vicki.
Yeah, really good question, Vicki. Thank you. Well, we do cook at home a lot. We have a tiny fridge, and we also have a little oven and a stovetop that meets all our needs. We eat meat occasionally, so, you know, I've never boiled a chicken in the tiny house, but we definitely eat at home all the time. So we live out in a rural part of Northern California. So, you know, running into town for dinner, you know, it's a lot of money. Like, you have gas, travel time, all that stuff. So I love to cook, and, you know, the tiny house works for us.
And Tammy, I'm guessing that one of the ways that the tiny kitchen works for you is that you probably have fewer things, but more, I don't want to say gadgets, but more tools maybe that do double or triple or quadruple duty in the kitchen.
Yeah, you know, when we downsized, we had our kitchen stuff was pretty substantial. For example, we had two sets of china, and each set had place settings for 12 people,
wow.
You know, things like that, plus dozens of pots and pans. And so when we were paring down over the years, we kind of just narrowed it down slowly to the things that we knew we would use all the time, like our cast iron pan. We have a couple key dishes that or pots, rather, that we use all the time. So we've basically chosen the tools that we use, and instead of having, you know, five spatulas, for example, we have one.
Right,
so
right.
It just makes things a little bit more streamlined and easier in the tiny house when we're cooking.
And while Vicky's, you know, very valid question about how in the world do you actually cook in a tiny house, I'm guessing that the cleanup in a tiny house kitchen is practically instantaneous.
Well, not instantaneous. It still takes time depending on how big of a mess we make. But, you know, it's definitely, it goes pretty quick. And Logan and I try and help each other during cleanup and things like that. But, you know, for larger meals, like over the holiday, Thanksgiving and Christmas, we ate at family's homes. My in-laws hosted a huge Thanksgiving dinner with, I think we had like 25 people there. So obviously, we couldn't squeeze all those folks in a tiny house, but we were able to help out with that dinner, which was fun.
Although before paring down, you would have had enough dishes to feed them all.
Probably, yeah.
Well, we're talking with Tammy Strobel about how to simplify and prioritize and smart size our lives and our homes. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. 1234. You can also send an email to talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page. And our on-air producer today, Bill Martins, will be happy to get your questions and comments into us. Now, I think Vicky was making the point that, you know, it's she has a hard enough time with the size of her own kitchen, which is quite obviously bigger than the size of yours, Tammy. But one of the things that I found really interesting is that you encourage people to pretend that they're living in a smaller space. And so, you know, that could be closing off doors to extra bedrooms and bathrooms. But I'm guessing you could also kind of pretend that in your kitchen and limit yourself to just a certain number of, like you said, pots and pans and utensils.
Yeah, you know, for us, it's kind of with our kitchen, when we had more kitchen stuff, we found that we weren't using probably 80% of the things. And it was more stressful because we couldn't find what we used all the time, the tools that were kind of key in the kitchen process with cooking. And sort of similar with bedrooms and extra things, like when we were downsizing, we closed off one room completely and got rid of all the stuff in there, sort of a test run to see if we could actually downsize to a smaller living space. So that was a helpful exercise for Logan and I.
And let's go back to the phones, and Mike in Oshkosh is up next. Hi, Mike.
Good afternoon. I was listening to this carefully, and one comment your guest made kind of struck a chord with me, and that is having to have the very latest thing, the very latest furniture, the very latest automobile, the very latest toys, redecorating your home. And, of course, one of the really bad ones, I think, in your guest's estimation would be upsizing. You have to have a bigger home to show that you can afford it, and then you have to fill it with all kinds of goodies. Well, for the last 30 years, up until my retirement, I've resisted these. I drive an older car, and my home is decorated and furnished with older things. But and it didn't have the latest ATVs and snowmobiles and toys. However, living this way has allowed me to purchase a small second home in France, and I think people need to be a little more careful with their choices. I have some younger friends that say, how in the world could you ever afford that? And I said, real easy. I didn't pay $20,000 for a new ATV, mm-hmm. and I don't have a $30,000 boat. I have a boat, but it's old. And I think this is something the younger generation really needs to consider.
I think that's a great point, Mike, and congratulations on that part-time home in France. That sounds wonderful. Tammy,
amazing.
I know, and I think there are a couple of really interesting points that Mike brought up. One is that, you know, we need to pass on information like this that we have from those older generations that were, whether by choice or necessity, much more frugal and thought a lot more about what to purchase or if to purchase something. You know, those are important values and ideas to pass along to following generations.
Yeah, I thank you for sharing your story, Mike. That's really super cool. I mean, and I think it just goes to show that, you know, you can make certain choices with your finances if you're able to and put money towards the things that really interest you. So, like, rather than, you know, a new snowmobile or boat or redecorating the house, Mike was able to buy this second home. And that's fantastic, especially if he's able to use it and it's in alignment with his values.
And Mike obviously did a very good job of prioritizing. And prioritizing also means taking that longer view and, you know, what's the ultimate goal and what's my real goal instead of getting kind of sidetracked with those everyday things. How did you and Logan go through the process of prioritizing, Tammy? And did you have the same priorities as you were smart sizing your lives?
Well, in the beginning, I would sort of say yes and no. It's funny because Logan was actually the one that thought of this whole downsizing thing. Like, I was very, very resistant. I didn't want to give up my stuff and the big apartment, but we had a lot of conversations and sort of planning sessions together and long talks about what we really wanted out of life. And after those long talks, I realized, well, you know, I don't want a stressful life where I'm commuting, you know, 2 hours a day and sitting most of the day. I wanted more flexibility and time to be with family. And so over the years, we've made big shifts in our lives to make that happen. And so I think no matter what your goal is, if you're creative and open to different ideas, it's possible.
And I think also Mike made a great point that it's not that he denied himself things. He said, I do have a boat, which mm-hmm. in Wisconsin, if you know, boating and snowmobiling are pretty common outdoor activities. And, you know, he said, I've got a boat. I have an ATV. It's just that I don't have the latest, greatest one. And, you know, I have a house, but it just doesn't have the newest furniture. I mean, it sounds like Mike really didn't deny himself things and he didn't feel deprived. It's not like he was suffering for this ultimate goal. You know, he was doing just fine and was able to buy that second house in France.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you bring up a really good point, and something I try and emphasize as well is that living simply isn't about austerity or denying yourself the things that make you happy. It's really about reprioritizing and rethinking your priorities and what you really want out of life. So that's going to look differently for everyone because we all have different life circumstances and family situations. So, take that step back and ask yourself, what makes me happy? What do I really want out of life? Because it's a short time we've got, so it's important to use it well.
We're talking with Tammy Strobel. She's the author of You Can Buy Happiness and It's Cheap, How One Woman Radically Simplified Her Life and How You Can Too. She blogs at rowdykittens.com, has great ideas there. And you can join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Tammy, we have Jenny in Williams Bay on the line, so let's go there. Hi, Jenny.
Hi. I wanted to know, she mentioned that her dad died, and I'm sorry. My grandma just died, and I actually have all of her stuff in my basement, and I have my great-grandpa's stuff and my grandpa's stuff, and my family likes us to house everything because we have a large basement. I'm wondering, what do you suggest about that kind of stuff that's sentimental and everybody wants you to keep it and not get rid of it, but it's like in a box in your basement?
That is such a good point to bring up, Jenny, and I think something that a lot of people struggle with, not just that the rest of the family expects you and wants you to hold on to, but a lot of us want to hold on to as well. Tammy, what would you say to that?
Well, first, Jenny, I just want to say I'm really sorry for your loss, but it's hard. But, oh my gosh, that sounds like a lot of stuff. And the sentimental items are hard to get rid of, but I also think that, you know, it might be a little unfair for your family to want you to keep all of it. Maybe the best course would be talking to your family and saying, hey, I want to tear down this stuff in my basement, and maybe even once a week for a couple hours, having some family members come over and start sorting through it. Because, you know, if it's just sitting in a box, it's such a shame because someone out there might be able to use that stuff. And it might be a family, a friend, or someone at a local charity who could use, you know, a set of dishes or some clothes. So I would suggest starting small and paring down. Mm-hmm. And you can also always take photos of things that, you know, you're having a hard time of letting go of. And that's one way to kind of keep the memory, but not the thing.
Well, and as you said, Tammy, I mean, it's one thing that it's in a box and it's not being used by someone who perhaps really needs that. But also, if it's in a box, it's more the idea that it's there than actually interacting with those photos or, you know, those papers from school or something like that. You know, it's more just knowing they're there than actually using them at all.
Yeah, and I think at least, so, you know, I mentioned my dad died last year, and we've been slowly sorting through his stuff, and especially with all his clothes, for example. My mom started giving some of those clothes away to friends and family members who might need them, and it also helped her let go of some of that, because, you know, like, my husband has a few of my dad's shirts that he wears all the time, and I know when my mom sees him wear those things, it makes her happy, but she also gives a lot away to charity, and she knows that people out there, you know, have some new coats and shoes that would have just been sitting in a closet otherwise. So it definitely takes time, and it's a process for sure.
But like you said, that knowing that there's a greater good that's happening because of you giving away those items, really, I think that really does change how you feel about it.
I think so, because there's a lot of folks out there that don't have enough, and especially in this economy where folks are losing their homes and they don't have the choice to voluntarily downsize, it's being forced upon them. That's a very different scenario. Mm-hmm. So if you can give away some of your extra stuff to help a family in need, I think that's a pretty powerful thing.
So, Tammy, you're involved with a new course called A Simple Year, 12 Months of Guided Simplicity. How did that course come about?
Oh, gosh, I'm really excited about this course. It's actually a collaborative e-course, and it's a year-long class, and it's just as it sounds. It's all about helping people simplify their lives, and I'm working with 10 other simplicity authors, and each month in this next year, there will be a different theme in the course, and you'll have a new author teaching on that theme. So it's really fun to be able to collaborate with other authors and hopefully help people simplify their lives and make room for what matters to them.
So it's an online course, so people anywhere really in the world can take part in it. And just going down the topics for the different months, there's January is clutter, February is busyness, and all the different senses of being too busy and the cost of being busy. March is travel. April is the kitchen. So going back to our earlier caller, she would probably be especially interested in that. May is digital, and you're doing that month. Then there's June, which is about work. July, which is about money. August is staying simple. September is a challenge. October is food. And November is, again, something you're teaching relationships. And December is the holidays. So it's really, it sounds like it's covering lots of different aspects of our lives.
Yeah. And it's, you know, again, great to collaborate with other authors because we all come at this from a different perspective. And I know Colin, one of the teachers, he travels all over the world and has been able to do that, I think, relatively inexpensively. And so it's a really cool thing. And so he's going to share some of his stories. And, you know, likewise, my friend Joshua Becker, he'll be teaching during the first month in January. And that's all about decluttering. And so, yeah, it's pretty exciting and it's self-paced and it should be really fun.
And the description says that every month participants get articles and information on that month's specific topic. But then there's also a live component, like a webinar or a teleseminar, where not only do you talk with the person who's doing that month as the leader, but also connect with other people. That sounds like a really great opportunity.
Yeah, I love doing the seminars because, you know, they are live and folks can tune in to ask questions online and kind of connect with each other. And for people who can't tune in for whatever reason, we record those so that they can watch later. But yeah, it's going to be a really cool course and I hope folks join in with us.
And people can find information about that by going to rowdykittens.com. That's rowdykittens.com. And then clicking on e-courses. And there's a link for a simple year, 12 months of guided simplicity. And I think that registration is opening for the next round starting tomorrow. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. It'll be open January 1st for the new year.
Great. Well, let's take at least one more call before we run out of time here. Chris in Madison. Hi, Chris.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
My husband has a dream of building a tiny house, and it's hard for me to envision what that could possibly look like when we have a one-year-old and a three-year-old, and we live in Wisconsin, where 3 or 4 months out of the year, it's really hard to be outside for any extended period of time. If we lived in, like, a warmer climate, I just wanted to know what, if you have experience with people that are living this way in colder climates and how they do it if they have young kids.
Sure, that's a great question, Chris. And Tammy, I know that you did talk to people in writing your book that had kids and were living in tiny houses.
Yeah, and Chris, I was listening to the weather during one of the breaks, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's so cold. But, you know, I have interviewed folks who live in tiny houses that have kids, and there are a lot of folks all over the country who live in these small spaces, and the weather isn't always agreeable, but they seem to be doing okay. And I think for tiny houses in particular, it's really important to build based on your geography and climate. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Logan and I sort of built our house to kind of either stay in Oregon or California. And we had some very cold weather a few weeks ago here in Northern California. We got to below freezing, which
wow.
You guys are probably like, oh, whatever we experienced.
People wear shorts here if it's anywhere over 32. So
yeah, so it was unusual for this area. It usually doesn't drop that low, but the tiny house did okay. But it's definitely really important to consider the insulation and your windows and all that stuff. So
well, and Tammy, maybe Chris doesn't need to go to a tiny house, but maybe just a smaller house.
Yeah, exactly. And there's that option, too. I mean, tiny houses are great, but there's also a lot of houses for sale that are smaller that you could probably buy to meet your needs. So maybe her husband could have like a tiny office in the backyard or something like that.
Well, and yeah. Like you said, you know, maybe giving it a test drive by living in half of your current living space.
Right. And seeing how that feels before you take the big plunge of investing in a tiny house or buying something new, just to make sure it works for your family.
Well, Tammy Strobel, thank you so much for spending time with us today and helping us end 2013 and start off 2014 on a good foot.
Oh, thank you so much. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Tammy Strobel is the author of You Can Buy Happiness and It's Cheap, How One Woman Radically Simplified Her Life and How You Can Too. And she blogs at rowdykittens.com. Well, coming up tomorrow, starting at 11, we have a couple of great rebroadcasts to share with you. First, Rebecca Cohen turned a New Year's resolution into a great commitment to her kids and herself. She's the author of 15 Minutes Outside, 365 Ways to Get Out of the House and Connect with Your Kids. And then cookbook author Terry Hope Romero shares great advice for adding more plant-based meals to your diet. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Thanks so much for listening, and Happy New Year.